Welcome to the Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the Grill Room is definitely on our tab. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
The greenest show on grass. That's what they call the Waste Management Phoenix Open. And what a show it was. Hi, I'm Bob Bubka, here with Alex Maselli. And let me welcome you to the Grill Room, the most comprehensive look into the world of global golf. Alex, can you believe what happens at the Waste Management Phoenix Open? Incredible display of fun at a golf tournament.
Well, I mean, Bob, it's always been a fun experience. So that's not that, you know, that doesn't surprise you. A lot of people, especially on a Super Bowl weekend, Sunday was still a little down comparatively, but something over 600,000 people showing up at a golf tournament. Now, one thing that we could talk about right now is how they count those people, because everybody seems to wonder about that. But they give you these specific numbers, you know, 5,465, 17,421, whatever it is. They give you specific numbers, so they must have their way of doing it. But 618,365, it's a lot of people watching a golf tournament over a week.
You know, Alex, the way they do it is they actually count the cars in the parking lot, and then they attribute 3.5 spectators in each car. Of course, we all know a lot of people come by themselves. A lot of people come with two in the car. So there's room for speculation on the accuracy of the numbers, but I guess maybe five or six people come in a car, so they figure it out that way, 3.5. But I think we'd be remiss, Mr. Maselli, if we didn't pay tribute to the Thunderbirds. You know, they started in 1937. They're the glue behind that event each year in Phoenix. And, you know, they do an incredible job. An incredible amount of money is raised for charities. And they actually, I think, could do a training film for other tournaments on how to do it right.
Well, I think you got to have the venue, first of all, and they do have the venue, even though Bubba Watson doesn't like it, to allow for what they're doing. I mean, the 16th hole has been now developed into something that's an amphitheater. They're working on doing the same thing on the 17th hole. So they have the venue to do it. They certainly have the market to do it in Phoenix and in a good time of year. That's not necessarily the case if you go to some other places. They're just not going to have the ability to do the same things. That being said, you know, you maximize what you got, and they've done a great job of doing exactly that.
Speaking of maximizing what you got, Hideki Matsuyama, he defeats Ricky Fowler in a four-hole playoff. Matsuyama, we have to take a hard, long look at this man's talent from Japan. I was informed maybe 4 or 5 years ago that Matsuyama, ability, people felt, you know, amongst the Japanese media, that he could become the greatest Japanese player ever, and he's doing nothing wrong to disprove that at this juncture. Now number 12 in the world, pretty incredible for somebody that's just going to turn 24 later this month.
Well, I think, you know, we can remember back in the days of Jumbo Ozaki, and everybody talked about how good he was, and when we had world rankings and Jumbo was in him, he was always so high, but he basically played in Japan, barely left the islands. So now you come to a guy like Hideki Matsuyama, who's played most of his golf in the United States, against, obviously, I think, you know, superior competition, and you look at what he did this week, where he didn't blink. And actually, between the number, I'm not sure what he was ranked before, but now number 12 in the world versus number 4, he's the guy that didn't make the mistakes. He's the guy that was steady down the stretch. He's the guy that did everything right. Ricky Fowler, numerous times, did everything wrong, sometimes escaped and sometimes didn't.
Yeah, he really did. Ricky Fowler had the tournament firmly in his grasp 1 minute. Then the next, he found himself in a playoff with Hideki. And certainly, Ricky was understandably upset and emotional after his playoff loss.
I mean, it's going to hurt because I felt like I had it, especially with the way I was swinging. Well, I mean, the hard part is having, you know, all my friends and family and grandpa and my dad, who haven't seen me win, so I'll be all right. But with how good I'm playing, I know I can win. So that's the hard part.
Ricky Fowler had his father, his grandfather in the gallery. Obviously, he wanted to win in front of those two special people in his life. It wasn't meant to be. But Ricky Fowler is somebody that I think we're going to be talking a lot about when the first major rolls around. Ricky Fowler, ever since that move to Butch Harmon, Alex, has really progressed and has an awesome golf game now. I mean, he is so long off the tee that it's scary. In fact, it probably cost him the tournament on that 17th hole when he hit his drive 360 yards that ended up in the water behind the green. But Ricky Fowler, I like him to win a major this year. I don't know your thoughts.
Well, I mean, first of all, Butch Harmon has been certainly a positive for him, as he's been a positive for Brant Snedeker, as he was a positive when he first took on Phil Mickelson. But at the same time, Bob, you know, Butch Harmon can't hit the shots. And for whatever reason, Ricky Fowler has a problem with the 17th hole. It wasn't just that one hole. It wasn't that one time in the final round where he made the mistake. You know, he made a mistake in the playoff. He's made a mistake, other mistakes in the past on that hole. So he's got to figure the hole out. I mean, that's the bottom line to that. And, you know, I don't think he made a mistake hitting driver, really, to be quite honest with you. I think it, unlike some other shots, it seemed to hit a downslope versus the upslope. If it hits the upslope, it's never going to go over into the water in the back of the green. He got a little unlucky, but he still doesn't know how to play the hole correctly, doesn't know how to get the most out of the hole. As others were sitting there making, you know, having the chances at either eagle chips or birdie chips, he's trying to make putts for par and bogey. That's just not what you need to do when you're the number four player in the world, and especially when you got a two-shot lead with two holes to go.
And he's hit it into that water to the left of the green 9 times. I would think at some point you're going to start missing right. I don't care if you miss right all the way into downtown Scottsdale. You certainly don't want to keep hitting it into the water. By the way, Bubba Watson, he really took on the golf course, said he didn't like it, said he was only there for his sponsors. Your thoughts on what Bubba Watson had to say?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think he may have been one of many that don't like the changes that Tom Weisskopf made to the golf course. It's a TPC course, which means the PGA Tour is involved with what happens with that golf course. They're the ones that decided what they wanted to do. I completely understand Bubba's stance on that. Most players, they look at the purse, but they also look at the venue. And if they don't like the venue, they don't usually go there. So that being said, Bubba Watson, because of his sponsors, has to go to a venue he doesn't like. Now, people can say, well, he's made so much money there, he's done this, he's done that, tied for 14th this year. But the bottom line is these guys make a lot of money, and they show up to places they want to show up to. So if someone asks you the question, which I really should get back to, if someone asks you the question about the golf course, I'm glad that someone will take the position and answer them accurately and honestly. Now, could he have been better about it? I don't know, maybe. But, I mean, it's Bubba Watson. People ask him that question looking for exactly what they got. And it's the same people that after they give him what he says, then they turn around and criticize him for criticizing the venue. Look, they had 600,000+ people show up on their count. Nobody was upset or offended by the fact that Bubba Watson didn't like the golf course. So I think that people have to kind of rein it back a little. Certainly Bubba needs to do some better things on the PR standpoint. But, you know, don't we applaud people when we ask them the question? They at least answer it honestly?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be a lost talent in the world of sport when an athlete is asked a question. Too often we hear what Bubba referred to as the PC answer, obviously politically correct. What Bubba said is what he felt, and I'm in your camp. I admire him for certainly for his honesty. Somebody I don't admire, though, Keegan Bradley's caddy, Pepsi, extra club in his bag. How does a professional golfer tee off with an extra club in your bag? It just blows my mind. I mean, that's one of the basic things. I mean, that'd be, to me, it's like going skydiving without a parachute.
Well, I mean, that's all on the caddy. There's no way around that. You can go all the way back to Ian Woosnam in the final round of the Open Championship. It's all on the caddy. They have certain jobs, and that's one of them, to make sure that they don't have too many clubs in the bag, make sure they got a towel, make sure they got rain gear in the bag, make sure they got enough balls to get around and get through the round, and whatever else is required by the player. You know, if it's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, but my goodness, you're right. There's no question about that. It's all on the caddy. And, you know, this is just the latest of some of the things that's interesting about Pepsi. I mean, he got in that confrontation with, back at the match play last year, with Jimenez. It's, you know, you're a caddy, for goodness sake. You know, you do your job, and it's an important job, but you do your job. And unfortunately, when you don't do your job well, it's when you get a lot of criticism. It sounds like an easy job, but it's when you do things like this, when you realize that it's not as easy, and it can become detrimental to your player.
And it's obviously bad timing. Keegan Bradley certainly not lighting it up so far, hasn't lit it up since he won the PGA Championship down in Atlanta. And then you have a caddy that makes a glaring omission in forgetting to count the number of clubs in the bag. You start getting those two things together, could be a caddy opening on the horizon. I hope not. I like Pepsi, but that's going to be Keegan Bradley's decision. You mentioned the name Brant Snedeker, Alex. He won last week Farmers Insurance Open. Now he finishes 33rd. Isn't Brant another guy that, you know, we mentioned Hideki as far as a potential winner of a major this year? Brant Snedeker, I think, fits under that profile too. Has all the talent in the world, an excellent putter, which is normally the criteria needed to win a major. Brant Snedeker could be a very viable candidate to win a major this year.
Well, I think, to be quite honest with you, if you're talking between Ricky Fowler and Brant Snedeker right now, I would take Snedeker, and the reason I would is because I think he's just got an unbelievable putting stroke, and then on top of that, he just seems to exude a lot of confidence now. Again, working with Butch Harmon, if there was any problems that he was having, it was ball striking, he'd figure that out, and then on top of that, you'd put that good putting stroke in there. I just think that Snedeker is the guy that you would have to look at and say he's certainly one of the top three or four that I would look at that hasn't won a major already as being one of those guys that has a very, very good chance, especially when you get to the slippery greens, not only at Augusta National, but also at Oakmont, where those greens are going to be just as slippery. I just think he'd be a tremendous asset if you were looking at a team to put together to win a major championship this year.
And Alex, you used the word confidence. I think on the European Tour, they're still in the Middle East, but Danny Willett wins the Omega Dubai Desert Classic. It's his fourth European Tour title. We got to take a hard, long look at Danny Willett, maybe representing Great Britain in the Olympics later on this summer.
Well, I think that's exactly what Danny Willett is thinking about. When you start looking at the names of the Englishmen that have been playing well in the past, you start realizing that Willett is maybe the cream of the crop right now. I mean, Lee Westwood's nowhere to be found. Ian Poulter is struggling as well. So, you know, you take a look at those guys, and you're realizing that, you know, Rory McIlroy is going to be playing for Ireland. I think that Danny Willett is certainly one of those guys that could be in Rio. If he wants to be in Rio, that's another question, but could make the team to play in Rio later on this year. And I think he would be a great addition. I know that he's worked really hard in his game. He's had some issues, but he's got dealt with them not from a game standpoint, but from a physical standpoint. And I just think that, you know, you start looking at the guys, and you roll Andy Sullivan there, another Englishman as well, and you know they're going to be much more formidable than you would have thought they would have been maybe a year ago, the Englishmen. And you know, it's almost like Wimbledon, Bob. You're always looking for a British player to win the Wimbledon. Well, now they got actually some substantial players that have a chance to do something when we get to the Olympics, and I think that's what they're looking for.
And the amazing thing in a Ryder Cup year, Alex, Danny Willett, Andy Sullivan, certainly not going to be a big stretch if we see them in Minnesota in September when the Ryder Cup kicks off. Davis Love, obviously the captain of the United States squad, Darren Clark, a European captain. The European side may have a different complexion altogether.
Well, I think we've talked about this before. It's pretty clear that some of the players, like a Westwood, like a Poulter, on our side, we have some of as well. I mean, people can question what will happen with Mickelson as an example. It's going to be a different look and a different feel, both sides. And this is, there's always a transition, Bob. It just depends on, you know, how big the transition is going to be. Is it going to be 4 rookies, 5 rookies, 6 rookies? But Willett and Sullivan, if they make that team, they're certainly going to be two of the rookies that will be on it. And it will be a much different look and a different feel. And that's something both Darren Clark and Davis Love are going to have to address.
And certainly Rory McIlroy is going to be the mainstay on that European Ryder Cup team. He finished sixth, but he is taking the high road with his game.
Encouraged with the good golf that I've played, and you know, it's been good because I know what I need to work on going into the next few weeks. So taking the positives from it, but obviously it could have been better.
You know, Rory McIlroy went into that event, said he would be disappointed if he didn't win in Dubai. And he didn't. Should his camp be a little concerned at this early juncture? I know the hype is going to start very soon about Rory McIlroy completing the Grand Slam when we get down to Augusta, and you know, his attempt at winning the Masters. But his early form certainly doesn't seem to be at the highest level that Rory McIlroy possesses.
Well, I don't think it is. And should his camp be concerned? I'm not sure about his camp, but if I'm Rory McIlroy, I'm a little concerned. When I throw the gauntlet down and say, I'm not going to be happy unless I walk out of here with a win, and I don't walk out of there with a win. In fact, actually, really never was, I didn't think really in it anywhere along the way for a win. That would make me a little concerned. I think that Rory McIlroy knows that, you know, he has to get back in the winner's circle to start feeling good about what he's doing with his game. And it doesn't look like there's any real issues with his swing. Just, you know, it's golf. And the other part of this equation, which we talk about all the time, you know, the guys that are playing against him, they're not like slouches. I mean, they show up when they want to show up. I mean, Danny Willett's a good example. Good player, showed up, played well. You know, Rafa Cabrera-Bello played well, showed up. Now he's 13th in the world. You got Andy Sullivan there. You got Henrik Stenson there. You know, you got guys that have been there in the past and show up. Maybe Lee Westwood has a good week. Maybe Ian Poulter. I mean, there's a long list of guys that can show up in these events. And so if you're Rory McIlroy, I mean, you want to come in saying, yo, I'm number two in the world. I should win this week because no one else is higher than me. But the bottom line is then you got to find a way to win. And he's having a struggle trying to find that way to win. And I think, you know, Bob, if you're in his camp, what do you think?
I don't know. You know, I'm starting to wonder whether, you know, you mentioned the fact he is number two in the world. He rose to number one in the world seemingly painless when he did achieve that goal. But now he's got Jordan Spieth there. And I don't know if there's some internal pressure going on with Rory McIlroy in his desire to get back to being number one in the world. We're going to be certainly keeping a close eye as this 2016 year rolls on and we get to the majors and everything, anticipated battles between Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth. We can't forget Jason Day. We can't forget Ricky Fowler and a host of other players. But I'm just curious if Rory McIlroy, too anxious to get back to that number one perch in the world and knows the only way he can get there is by winning, and he's not doing that right now.
Yeah, clearly not winning. But someone that is, on what seemed to be about playoff Sunday, Bobby, is Esteban Toledo, defeated Billy Andrade on the third playoff hole for the Allianz Championship title in his fourth win on the Champions Tour. But that was not the one that surprised me. What surprised me was the LPGA, Bob, the Coates Golf Championship. Ha Na Yang wins. But what was interesting is that she won partly because of a pretty good meltdown by Lydia Ko. A string of bogeys, played poorly in I think it was the third round, and couldn't get all the way back in the fourth round, even though she got close. To me, that was the most surprising thing. You tell me what you thought about Lydia Ko's meltdown.
And before we get to my thoughts on Lydia Ko, I just want to go back to Esteban Toledo once. You know, they used to have, and they may still have, like an auxiliary pro-am on Saturday for players that missed the 36-hole cut in an event. And this one was up at Hartford, the Buick Open back in those days. And they were one amateur short for Saturday. He asked me if I wanted to play. I showed up, and who was my partner? None other than Esteban Toledo. And boy, we had a marvelous time with his back boxing background and you know, his dirt floor home that he lived in, 11 children. And now, I mean, I'm hard-pressed, Alex, to find anybody that has blossomed more in their transition from the PGA Tour to what he's doing on the Champions Tour. That was his fourth victory. I mean, that's pretty amazing stuff.
Well, Bob, I mean, you know, look, we see guys that we think come out on the Champions Tour from the PGA Tour, and they're going to play well, and they don't. We see guys that we don't know much about, didn't have much success on the PGA Tour, get out to the Champions Tour and play well. And I think those guys realize that this is their last shot. There's a chance there. If you keep yourself fit, you keep yourself in pretty decent shape, you keep your game in pretty decent shape, you can win some decent money out on the Champions Tour. And so Esteban Toledo has taken that to heart and played very, very well. But you didn't answer my question about Lydia Ko.
Well, I am a little bit surprised, but it is early in the year. She has such tremendous talent that I can't see anybody getting in her way, maybe with the exception of Brooks Henderson, the young girl from Canada, who I'm very impressed with her ability to play the game. You know, Lydia Ko just can't fire on all cylinders week after week after week. She's now 18 years old, an old 18. I mean, a savvy veteran on the LPGA Tour at 18 years old. But I think by the end of the season, I think we're going to be more surprised, Alex, by what she has accomplished than what she hasn't accomplished. But we'll have to wait and see. No doubt in my mind that Lydia Ko has everything required to be a superstar on the LPGA Tour and for as long as she wants.
All right. By the way, the Grill Room is proud to be entertaining the active men and women in our military, as well as our veterans, as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Alex, who do you think won the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America's Old Tom Morris Award this year? Well, we'll find out after a quick break. You're listening to the Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at the Grill Room Golf Show.
You're listening to the Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Ricky Fowler agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere. Alex, right now I'd like to mention the Kapalua Villas Maui, the ultimate hideaway where privacy is as much a part of the experience as the world-class facilities. 3 beaches, 11 restaurants, a great spa, championship golf, and world-class tennis. If a trip to Maui is in your plans, visit KapaluaVillasMaui.com or call them at 800-545-0018 to make your reservation today. Kapalua Villas Maui, the complete Hawaii experience.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
He's Mr. Maselli. I'm just Bob. And, you know, each year the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America honors an individual who, through a lifetime commitment to the game of golf, has helped mold the welfare of the game in a manner and style exemplified by old Tom Morris. In case you forgot, Morris, a 4-time British Open winner, was a longtime superintendent at St. Andrews until his death in 1908. This year's recipient is Herb Kohler, who brought world-caliber golf to the company that bears his family name and is the most synonymous with manufacturing leading-edge products for homes around the world.
You know, Bob, I believe you had a chance to speak with the one and only Herb Kohler.
Well, listeners, I can't tell you the excitement level that I'm feeling right now. Joining us in the grill room, an old friend and somebody that I respect and admire, and obviously people in the world of golf admire him also, the winner of the Old Tom Morris Award, one of the most prestigious awards in the world of golf, Herb Kohler. What does it mean to you to receive the Old Tom Morris Award?
Oh, heavens. Well, when you really step into golf, one of the first things you learn about is this marvelous individual by the name of Old Tom Morris. You learn that he was a great entrepreneur, that he was a designer and inventor. He created a golf ball. He designed clubs. He was the primary influence in starting the Open Championship, what we call it in the United States, we call the British Open. He was a four-time winner of that championship. He was just this all-around magnetic person. And on the best of all, he was the first official keeper of the greens. A man who really understood and appreciated the environment. The work you have to put into it to enhance that environment and keep it in a stately condition, rough and ready for the strongest games of golf. And I, in turn, have a great regard for this human being. So to receive this award, I can't tell you the honor it is, Bob.
We've known Herb for quite a long time, and the better you get to know Herb Kohler, Alex, the more you marvel at his love of the game of golf and his enthusiasm. And you know, when you go to Kohler, Wisconsin, as we just recently did for the PGA Championship at Whistling Straits, you talk to people in the community. I mean, he is so much beloved by anybody that ever has an opportunity to meet him in person. And I know he's one of your favorite people, along with one of my favorite people.
Well, you know, I think if you go to Kohler, Wisconsin, you realize the importance of Herb Kohler to the entire area. And then he takes what he did in, obviously, all the stuff he's done in plumbing. I'm going to say that, plumbing, I don't know what you call it, sinks and bathtubs and fixtures and everything else. And he took a small company, built it to where it is, and then he went ahead and tried to do the same thing in golf, getting involved in golf, taking places that no one would ever have thought about doing golf courses on, and now all of a sudden taking those and building them and making them bigger and better. And, you know, he's held PGA Championships, he's held Senior Opens, he's held U.S. Amateurs, and now he's going to have a Ryder Cup eventually. So, I mean, there's a lot that Herb Kohler has done, not only, you know, out there in front, but behind the scenes, and a lot of it out of his own checkbook, which is also something that's required sometimes, especially when you go into areas that haven't really seen a lot of professional golf in the past. So, I mean, Herb Kohler has done a lot. You know, people can talk about Herb Kohler, and they can talk about Donald Trump to some extent. They can talk about Mike Kaiser. They're all in some way in the same sentence for different things, but all part and parcel of what they've tried to do for the growth of golf in this country.
And not only in this country, Alex, Herb Kohler has fallen in love with the village of St. Andrews and has some amazing properties there.
Well, you're absolutely right, Bob. I mean, you're remiss if not talking about his love for St. Andrews. I mean, all the things he's done with Hamilton Hall, owns the Duke's course. It's just, you know, he's got, and obviously owns the Old Course Hotel that's off the 17th. So, yeah, Herb Kohler's got a big presence, a big footprint, I should say. He's a big guy with a big footprint in St. Andrews, and he's not the only one. Again, you go with the Kaiser overseas, you go with Trump overseas. So they're all involved in golf worldwide, and they've done, you know, you have to say, point by point, everything they have done pretty much has been a very big, big positive in a sport that is in some ways struggling, not only in the United States, but around the world.
And what's amazing with Herb Kohler, as far as I'm concerned, Alex, with his immense wealth and outstanding reputation, and certainly deserving of the old Tom Morris Award by the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, he is a nice guy. I mean, he is somebody you could sit down and have a cup of coffee with, and just amazing what a personality is. And I think you and I are pretty lucky. You know, he really likes you. I get along very well with him, and he's somebody that I think we both agree, Alex, we're proud to call a friend.
Yeah, and I think the best part about all this, Bob, is when Herb Kohler is no longer involved in these things, the way that his family's got it set up and the organization is set up, they're going to continue to do what he has been doing, which is a positive. I mean, you want it to continue. You want it to grow, what they're trying to do, and I think that's another positive and something that he set up as well.
All right, let's move along. And did you know that both NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell and European Tour head Keith Pally talked this week about transparency and the need to be forthcoming on fines and penalties? Now, the question begs, is it time for the PGA Tour to take another look at the way they deal with those things?
Well, I think it's been a time for a long time, Bob. The question is, will they? And, you know, to be honest with you, I think they still believe that it's fine not to be forthcoming with this information, to let everybody be in the dark about it, even their own players. And I just, you know, at some point that's going to come back and really, I think, affect you and hurt you. I think that they should look at it. I think people understand that commissioners fine players in different sports. I think that when you pretend that it happens, but we're not going to tell you about it, I think that's just a wrong message to send, not only to the public, not only to the players, but everybody involved in the game of golf. I mean, if somebody makes a mistake, people should know about it. This is a sport. We want to make it a major sport, and we should move on from it. But when you sit there and don't put the information out there, all it does is create speculation, which, and then in turn, I think it becomes a bigger story than what would have been probably something very small.
But in the argument, is the argument that could be made by the PGA Tour, hey, it's worked this well this long, why change it?
Well, that's part of the argument. The other argument is nobody's clamoring for us to sit there and give information about fines and penalties. Well, just because no one's clamoring doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. But the PGA Tour, in its infinite wisdom, decides what they want to do, and when they make that decision, they move on, and there you go. And we're still in the situation of not knowing when someone gets dinged for tossing the club in the water. I mean, I think that just doesn't make any sense, but that's the PGA Tour's way, and hopefully PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Finchem will listen to what both Roger Goodell said at the Super Bowl and Keith Pelly said earlier this week, last week. But I doubt it fell anywhere but on deaf ears.
Somebody that you got to meet while he was playing amateur golf, and I know you were highly impressed with his talents. He's been doing remarkably well the last few weeks.
Yeah, Bryson DeChambeau played the last 3 weeks in the Middle East on the European Tour. Results: 3 made cuts, a T54 at the HSBC Abu Dhabi Golf Championships after a round of 64, 67th at the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters, T16 last week at the Omega Desert, Dubai Desert Classic with rounds of 70, 69, 68, 69. So, Bob, that being said, what do you think about his chances when he makes the leap to the pros after the Masters?
You know, it's an amazing thing when you look at highly successful golfers prior to turning professional. It's not a surefire guarantee that you're going to have success on the PGA Tour. But I think in this case, Bryson's, you know, when you look at his talent, you look at his demeanor, you look at his scientific approach, I think you were explaining to our Grill Room listeners not too long ago that all of his clubs are the length of a 7-iron. He's a unique individual that is taking a unique approach to play the game, and it seems to be working thus far. So why not? Why wouldn't he continue, you know, to be successful when he gets to the best players in the world? I like his chances. I'd like to buy some stock in Bryson if I could.
Well, yeah, Bob, I think you can only tell how good a player is going to be when he's playing against the best players in the world, which he did for 3 weeks on the European Tour, making three cuts. And then, obviously, the final one at Omega Divide Desert Classic, finishing T16 in what is a very good field and not having a bad round. And the other tournaments he played in, he had some difficult rounds, things that I'm sure he'd like to take back. But, I mean, when he shot 64 in the opening round in Dubai, in Abu Dhabi, I mean, there was a lot of focus on him, which, you know, that's one of the things you have to get used to as well, playing in final groups with Rory McIlroy and things like that. And he didn't play as well down the stretch as I'm sure he would have liked to. But, you know, you can see a maturation process over just the 3 weeks in the desert. Now he comes back to the U.S. He's going to play at Bay Hill on a sponsor's exemption because of the fact that he's a U.S. amateur / NCAA champion. And then he's going to play in the Masters because of his U.S. amateur win. And then all likelihood he's going to turn pro when he goes to Hilton Head the following week. And I think what you're going to see from him is you're going to see a guy that will contend relatively quickly. And then what it comes down to is, you know, it's just golf. I mean, how well do you deal with some of the situations you're going to run into on the PGA Tour or in the professional ranks? And I think that Bryson DeChambeau is a very smart individual. People may not know his history, but, I mean, he was a guy that was going to get his degree in physics at SMU, except for his senior year getting derailed by the NCAA. Bottom line is I think he's the guy that he's part of what is going to be the new normal out on the PGA Tour as we move forward. So I respect what he's doing, and I think he's going to be a pretty good pro. So we'll see what happens.
Big news, Alex, with the USGA. They named Diana Murphy president. What will her platform be? Has she offered any hints about how she and the USGA plan to get the game back on track and grow the game? You know anything, Alex?
Well, I mean, looking at her her opening statement about her taking over as president, Bob, she talked about how there seems to be more gloom hanging around golf than the sport deserves. And basically the marketplace of the world is changing, and that she feels like the bottom line is that there are serious challenges because of modern life, but that the pure pleasure of the game and the fellowship and the competition and everything involved with that should make the difference. Unfortunately, she didn't really give any guidance on how to get people thinking that her particular way. I mean, you know, look, when you have the demands of the 5-year-old kid that wants to play baseball and the 12-year-old girl that's wanting to play soccer, and you come home every night and they have this practice or that practice, or they have homework or whatever it is, and then on the weekend they have in the morning you take them to this baseball game or that soccer game or whatever it may be, or, you know, you're at your job, you have certain responsibilities. Look, I mean, golf finds its way to be on the third or fourth tier of that, and how she believes that's going to change or how she's going to change that is a very difficult question that no one seems to have the answer to. It's easy to identify the problem to some extent. It's a much harder to identify a solution. So I'm waiting to hear what she believes the solution is to that.
And I think one of the major differences from yesteryear, and with the amount of two parents working, you know, when it comes to weekend, when it was just the male predominantly in the workforce, when it came to the weekend, he certainly was entitled to go, maybe go play a round of golf and relax a little bit. But, you know, the complexion of that situation changes drastically when you have a husband and wife that work all week, and it comes the weekend. Pretty difficult for the husband to say, okay, honey, you watch the kids, you worked all week, but I'm going to go play golf. And I don't have an idea how we get around that situation.
Well, there's no easy way, and that's part of the reason why the question is so difficult. There's no easy answer. It's almost like, is there an easy answer to North Korea? No. There's different things you can try, and hopefully they all have some part of the solution in them. But, and I think to say some of the things that we're trying now makes sense, meaning if it's First Tee or all these other programs that are out there, they're addressing certain things, but we're not even sure how successful they are. We don't really have a good measure of them. But, I mean, but that's not addressing the bigger question. How do you deal with getting parents to go out there with their kids or parents to just play themselves, for goodness sake, because that's what's required. I mean, the parent, it used to be the parents going out and playing, and now that's not happening. And you're starting to see it more and more, and the difficulties for this game are becoming more and more acute. Making golf part of the Olympics is not going to be the answer. It may be part of an answer, but it's a small part of a much bigger, difficult question and answer that we're going to have to follow.
You know, the Grill Room believes that growing the game has to start with kids in junior golf. And in order for the kids to learn the game, have fun doing it, and be successful, they have to have the right equipment. Yes, even the little ones. And now there's no reason for any child to play with cut-down clubs ever again. The Grill Room's partner, Golfin, that is G-O-L-P-H-I-N, has the answer. Just visit golfin.com to see how they can help your junior golfer learn to love the sport of a lifetime.
Let's take a short break. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The Golden Bear agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
The Holiday Inn Resort Waikiki Beachcombers, not only right in the heart of Waikiki, but it's only 300 short steps to the famous Waikiki Beach. Truly a vacation retreat. Reflects the culture of Honolulu and the spirit of Aloha. 496 comfortable guest rooms, complimentary Wi-Fi. The Jimmy Buffett restaurant, which is now a farm-to-table restaurant. And farm-to-table to me is great. I mean, I don't think people understand how great it really is. So the Buffett restaurant is great. Everything about the beach home is great. So I would recommend it highly. Anyone coming to Honolulu, the Holiday Inn Resort Waikiki Beachcomber, it is great. Feel the spirit of Aloha. 877-577-5756. Go online at the Waikiki Beachcomber Resort.com. I mean, obviously, it's just a lot of fun. And I will tell you right now that next year, exactly where I'm staying again.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
All right, we're back in the Grill Room. He's Alex Maselli. I'm Bob Bubka. And have you heard anything about Tiger lately? And what in the world is Joe LaCarva, Tiger's caddy, doing while Tiger isn't playing?
Well, Bob, I mean, you're asking the wrong person. You're the Tiger expert. I'm just on the periphery of that whole situation. You know, Joe LaCava isn't caddying. There's a story this week about the fact that he's not and he's waiting for his guy. The things that I've heard, Bob, is the likelihood you're going to see Tiger Woods in the 2016 season is pretty much none. I don't think that you're really going to see him. I don't know what you've been hearing.
I've been hearing similar thoughts, possibly later on this summer with the proper rehab and you know, once they ascertain whether this latest procedure on his back was successful. You know, he just turned 40 years old, and, you know, that body just doesn't respond the way it did when he was 25, 26, 27 years old. And, you know, Tiger Woods, beyond any question of a doubt, had an unbelievable ability to play the game of golf. but also he sustained more injuries than the average player has sustained, with, you know, injuries to his knee and injuries you know, to his back, and you know, it just seems the list goes on and on. And I don't really know, Alex, if it was the violent nature of his swing. I mean, he swung harder and faster at a golf ball than anybody that ever played. I don't know whether he spent too much time in the gym bulking up to the point where you can overdo it in the gym. There are a lot of theories out there, and I don't know if any one theory is actually the answer to the question, but it could very well be a combination of everything that I just referenced.
Well, I mean, Bob, you can talk about on-course problems, off-course problems, a lot of different issues. The bottom line is the Tiger Woods that we saw back in 2000 or 2002 or 2005, we will never see again. And the question is will he ever come back to be anything close to what he was before? Because right now, when you saw him play over the last maybe couple years, he was relatively a shell of what Tiger Woods used to be. And no matter what the surgeries have done, he's going to have to adjust and change, and he's going to have to adjust and change in an environment where he's over 40 years old, and where everybody's getting much, much better and much, much stronger. And that's a compliment or a tribute to him, that these guys realize that they have to come out here and be a much better athlete than they had to be in the past. That being said, I think when we see Tiger Woods again, it's more ceremonial than it's going to be competitive, and there's no way around that.
A couple of things, Alex. Number one, in your opinion, and you certainly have your finger on the pulse of this game, unlike almost anybody else involved in the media, is it likely that we'll ever see anybody ever dominate the sport like we witnessed Tiger Woods dominate?
Well, you know, for a period of time, maybe a short period of time. For a long period of time, no. But, I mean, let's be honest, last year, through two major championships, I think we thought that Jordan Spieth was pretty much in control of what was going on in the golf course and professionally in the world. So, and if he doesn't make maybe a couple of mistakes down the stretch at the Open Championship at St. Andrews, I think that would have been a pretty dominant performance going into Whistling Straits. So, yes, I think for short periods of time, yes. For longer periods of time, as Tiger did, I think that would be much more difficult.
You know, when you look at the fickle nature of the game, Alex, all we have to do is look at Ricky Fowler. 2 years ago, top five in all four majors. You would think that, wow, he was destined to win a major in 2015, but it didn't happen. And golf is that way. Jordan Spieth, yes, won two majors last year. You accurately pointed out an opportunity to win the third major, but it didn't happen. But that's no guarantee that he's going to be able to duplicate that performance or come even close to duplicating that performance. I would think that if you're assessing Jordan Spieth, currently the number one player in the world, if he were to win a major, one major this year, it would be an absolutely incredible season for Jordan Spieth.
Well, I think that's true. I think that's true even when Tiger used to talk about it. I mean, it's not a really successful season unless you've won majors. Now, as Tiger got older and he wasn't winning majors, he'd talk about, well, look, I won five times this year, so I don't know how you could think it's anything but a successful season. But deep down, in his soul, he knew that it wasn't a successful season if he didn't win a major. And you flip that, if you win a major, the rest of the season really doesn't matter too much, because that's what it's all about. When anybody wants to talk about anything else, they can talk about all the wins you have on tour, but the only ones people remember, the only ones people talk about, are the four majors. And that's what all these guys are gearing up for and have geared up for in the past.
And right now, on that golf landscape, there are a lot of quality players gearing up for this first major that's going to be here sooner than we think. Do you know what swing oil is, Mr. Maselli? Well, let me tell you, there's oil for the car, and then there's oil for your joints that can help your golf swing. At least Jason Day is convinced. Anyway, I wanted to know more about swing oil, so I went straight to the top guy, Tom Healy.
All right, when you're at the merchandise show, you hope to run into something new, something exciting, something that's going to be beneficial to golfers anywhere. Mike Egling, who I've known on the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour for a huge number of years, always represented great products. He told me about Swing Oil. We're now here at the booth. We're alongside Tom Healy. He likes to call himself the head pro of Swing Oil. So, Mike, if you don't mind, I'm going to begin with Tom. Tom, if you can, give me the genesis of Swing Oil.
Well, thanks, Bob, for having me on air, by the way. And it started with our founder, Charlie Collier, years ago. He used to do the longest day of golf at his club. And when there, he would always have a drink there for guys to replenish. One year he didn't have the drink available, and somebody said, hey, where's our Swing Oil? Charlie said, wow, what a great name. What a great thing. So he trademarked the name and started thinking all the benefits of a Swing Oil. What do you think about a drink? Smooth swing, get loose. And that's kind of where the brand came from. So Charlie had that idea, and now we're bringing it to a 3-ounce drink form, a golfer supplement for golfers called Swing Oil.
Well, over the years that I've known Mike, he's only represented quality products. And Mike, you put your reputation on the line after many years of being out there. If you're taking a product to professionals at the highest level in golf, you had to be very comfortable that this product was good.
Oh, absolutely. And I can say this, I've been fortunate enough to be with some companies, and they've managed to climb to the top, and that's been a fun journey. But I can honestly say I've never seen a product with the growth that we've seen. And obviously it works, because I can't take a product out there like this and try to sell them on it. It has to work. So it started earlier in the year, and guys started to take it. One of the guys that really kicked it off, Bart Bryant, who's had a chronic wrist injury and thought that he was never going to play golf again, and took it at French Lick this year, which was brutal conditions. It was cold, and he said 72-hole event. Typically, they play 54. He felt better the last day than he did the first. He went online and ordered it online, and Tom called me up. And, you know, obviously when they buy it, that means something, because they're used to getting everything for free. So they were nice enough. I was out there, and we started supplying product to the players. And by the end of the year, it was phenomenal. At the Schwab Cup, we had almost half the field. And the biggest testimony of the year was Kenny Perry. And basically, it's a supplement, so people are used to pills that work right away. And he took it, and he said, I don't feel anything yet, but it tastes great. And a couple weeks later, he came to me, and he stopped taking an anti-inflammatory medicine. Well, he went on that week to win the tournament and gave us a great testimony and said how well it worked, and he loved it, and he was loose out there, and it just grew leaps and bounds from that point.
Well, if you're in the automobile business and you sell a car and somebody says it rides like a Cadillac, you know you have a pretty good product. If you're in the golf business and you're able to say tour-tested, tour-proven, you have a pretty good product, and that's exactly the scenario with Swing Oil.
Yeah, that's true. And back on what Mike said about a quality product, you said it earlier. You know, we've put a lot of training and testing into this product, so we're certified for sports, NSF. You know, getting a great player like Jason Day on board to be our brand ambassador. You know, Jason, and that be a PGA-sanctioned product, you have to have certified testing, and NSF does it for the PGA. So, you know, that gives us the great feeling of it's a quality brand, it's a safe brand, it's a healthy product, and it's also tour-proven so the players can drink it. So we feel great that that's part of our story.
All right, let's get to the important part here. People listening to this say, I want to get some Swing Oil. What's the easiest way for them to accomplish that?
You just go to our website, swingoil.com, and on our website, it's all our information, our order information, and just let you know that if you send an email to the contact, every email goes to me. So when you're sending an email to the contact at Swing Oil, it comes to me. We can help you with the order process. We also have an independent sales rep team out there, which is selling to all the green grass stores and all the pro shops, which is great for us. So we're really feeling a lot of momentum. So contact us, go to our website, find out all about it. We have some great links to Jason, to the players, the testimonials. And, you know, we're fortunate to have those players on board. We're fortunate to have Mike Egling with us, and we feel really positive about our future.
Mike, thank you. Tom, thank you. Continued success. And I'm going to go drink some swing oil, see if I can loosen up. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Bob. Take care.
Well, Bobby, I got to be honest with you. As old as we are, with the joints we got, I think it's time that we both go get some swing oil. All right, that's it for this week. You've been listening to The Grill Room, the most comprehensive look into the world of global golf, heard on TuneIn and the Armed Forces Radio Network and powered by GolfWeek.com. By the way, The Grill Room is also available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, and, of course, on our website, thegrillroom.com. If you have a minute, please let us know what you like or don't like about our new 2016 revamped show format. We'd love to have your feedback. You can send us an email at menu, that's M-E-N-U, at thegrillroom.com.
A big thank you to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, and congratulations once again to Herb Cola, winner of the old Tom Morris Award. Also to Golfin, Innovative Clubs for Kids, and TheGolfWeek.com. For Janet Self, Alex Maselli, and myself, Bob Bupka, thank you for being a part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and like us on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show. Till next time, for Alex Maselli, I'm Bob Bupka saying thank you for listening to The Grill Room.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.